It's the show for UFC fans across the globe. This is Ultimate Fighting Weekly with Chris Toplak. 3, 2, 1.
This is episode 53 of Ultimate Fighting Weekly. My name is Chris Toplak. Thanks for joining me. On this edition of the program, Rashad Evans requires surgery. GSP continues to make bold statements on drug users and drug testing. Vitor Belfort's bizarre and laughable request for his upcoming fight against Chris Weidman. Nick Diaz makes a demand upon his return, if he even does return. And predictions for UFC Fight Night, Kim versus Hathaway. But first, let's talk about the event that was UFC 170. It took place last night from the Mandalay Bay Event Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. While it was a card that was plagued with injuries, it still turned out to be, I would say, a moderate success. Not a runaway success. Wasn't disappointing, but a moderate success. Let's just put it to you that way. So the prelims were pretty good. Again, we were facing the same scenario like many events before. Decision, 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 decision. And it was getting repetitive, and while the fights were not lacking excitement, it's just a horrible trend to fall into. So not to worry, we did not have 10 decisions, much like UFC 169 in a prior event before that, where I believe there were 10 or 11 there as well. So yeah, there's actually some finishes in this one. In fact, we had some bonuses. This is where, for a change as well, this is the second event in a row where it's been the bonus change. So, fight of the night went to Rory McDonald versus Damian Maia. What's funny is that I was actually going to call this fight of the night prior to the event. I was going to say this is the people's main event. It's going to be exciting, but I bit my tongue just in case it was a stinker. Should have went with my gut there, but they did win $50,000 apiece. Performance of the night went to Ronda Rousey and the Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson. So, let's go over the card here. In terms of the prelim card on UFC Fight Pass, Eric Koch back in the win column. It seemed like he lost a lot of his momentum at featherweight. He has finally moved up to lightweight, more of a natural weight class for him. And he won via TKO. Zach Makovsky in the flyweight division. He's now 2-0 since entering the octagon. So he defeated Scott Jorgensen and then Josh Sampo in this one. He's still about a victory away from knocking on the door of a title opportunity. But nevertheless, due to the lack of depth in that division, he could certainly make that happen in a hurry. So very impressed with him. He is the former bantamweight champion over in Bellator. So he is proving the Bellator fighters can come over and find success. Rafael Assuncao defeated Pedro Munhoz by unanimous decision. So that is 6 in a row for Rafael Assuncao. And I can't foresee anybody else getting a title opportunity against Henan Burrell but him. When you've won 6 in a row and you've defeated some top 10 opponents along the way, I think he's well deserving of that shot. Again, there's nobody else who I would give it to at this point. There seems to be a traffic jam at 135, so I would probably give it to Assuncao. So perhaps, I know that Dana White was not willing to really formally make that announcement, but it's the only one that seems logical in that weight class. In the women's bantamweight division, of course, this aired on Fox Sports 1 or Sportsnet 360 up here in Canada. It headlined the prelim card. It was Alexis Davis narrowly defeating Jessica Ai. Was a razor-thin decision. And it was a split decision, I should say. So it was 28-29, 29-28, 29-28 for Alexis Davis. It seems as though media members and fans alike were kind of split right down the middle. I had it for Alexis Davis personally, just barely edging out Jessica Ai. Alexis Davis was a little bit more active. She had some great takedowns as well that she threw in there. I like how she mixes it up on the feet, but the thing about Jessica Ai is that when she was stringing together combinations, she's also more powerful as well, too. So I really feel that if Jessica Ai worked on her gas tank in this fight, because she did seem to wear down in the later rounds, she would have emerged victorious, no doubt about it. But Alexis Davis has a great gas tank. She's well-rounded, so she got the victory, well-deserved. Here's the thing, though. Will she be next in line for a women's bantamweight title opportunity? I'll talk about that in just a bit. On the main card, it was the Wonder Boy, Stephen Thompson, getting by Robert Whittaker via TKO. I love Stephen Thompson. For those who are not aware of what he's accomplished outside of the UFC, he was a world kickboxing champion. And actually, George St. Pierre has sparred with him and trained with him and has gone on the record to say he's arguably the best striker I have ever trained with. So high praise from arguably one of the best of all time. So from there, that's how I really became infatuated with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, because I thought, okay, anybody that gets that kind of praise from a top fighter in UFC history, I've got to pay attention to them, obviously. It'd be crazy if I didn't. So again, I love his stance. It's just a typical karate stance. Although he keeps his hands low, he's always darting forward, moving back, darting forward, moving back. And it's a very smart move. And it's still exciting as well, too. So he won by TKO, and he did win a performance of the night, $50,000 for that performance. So very good. Also in the welterweight division, Mike Pyle, who, and it's funny, Showdown Joe. And if you're not familiar with him, he's an MMA personality up here in Canada. He was saying there should be a Mike Pyle drinking game. Anytime that Mike Goldberg or Joe Rogan calls him a veteran or experienced, to take a shot. Well, if you did that, you'd be drunk after the first round, because that's all they call him. So he defeated TJ Waldberger by TKO in a fight that went on far too long. Herb Dean was just simply off tonight. Normally, I have the utmost respect for him, and I still do. Something was wrong. I'm not sure if he wasn't taking his medication. Perhaps he was taking medication that affected his refereeing, but it was just completely off. So Mike Pyle ended the fight by elbows and punches, but TJ was just taking so many unnecessary shots. I mean, it probably should have been stopped about 10 seconds before that. Now, I know that some say, 10 seconds, what does that look like? In the world of the UFC, it can mean a lot. It can mean about 5-6 punches or elbows right there. And that's doing a lot of unnecessary damage. So Mike Pyle definitely won that fight. He is ranked number 15. He wants a top 10 opponent. Does he deserve it? I'm not sure at this point. I mean, he has done really well in the UFC, I believe. And this is from memory. I think he's 9-4. Which is absolutely incredible, especially in the welterweight division, which is a who's who of contenders. And also on top of that, you know, as to quote Dana White, it's a murderer's row of fighters there. It's a stacked division. So I probably would consider him, giving him a top 10 opponent. I can't imagine he's going to make a title run. He had that opportunity and he lost to Matt Brown. But nevertheless, he's a fun fighter. He always delivers. And, I'd personally like to see him in there with an exciting opponent. Also in the welterweight division, as I mentioned, it did take home fight of the night. It was Rory McDonald defeating Damian Maia via unanimous decision. It was 29-28 all across the board. Damian Maia looked incredible in that first round. And I have to give the utmost amount of respect to Rory McDonald for surviving that first round. And he did not panic. He remained calm. And he composed himself. I mean, at one point in that round, he had a 5-time jiu-jitsu world champion on top of him in full mount. Now, how many fighters would panic in that situation? I'm willing to bet about 85% of them. Now, the other 15% are either just well-composed or simply crazy. But Damian Maia had him in full mount. He was controlling him on the ground. Rory McDonald eventually found his opening, got it back to the feet, and in that second round was landing some excellent crisp combinations on Damian Maia, and powerful ones at that too. We haven't seen this from Rory in quite some time, so it was nice to see him just kind of unload on Damian. I hit him with a huge body kick that I thought was actually going to end the fight, but Damian actually composed himself, barely surviving until the end of the third round there. But Rory definitely pushed forward, tried to finish it, so nobody could criticize him for that. And he looked outstanding compared to his past couple of fights against Jake Ellenberger and Robbie Lawler. Those fights were not only lackluster, but he was just so tentative. It seemed as though he was afraid to lose. Different mentality going into this fight. He actually mentioned, you know what, I just went in there. I wanted to push forward. I wasn't happy with my performances previously. This needed to change. So I'm glad that not only he had more of a sense of urgency there, but more of a sense to compete. You know, when you go inside the octagon and you fight not to lose, the results are always going to be mixed. I mean, I know that George has come under fire for that. But even then, he stepped up way further than Rory did in his past couple of fights. Those were just completely unlike him, especially from what we've seen from Rory in the past. So a funny story that actually occurred at the post-fight conference in regards to Rory McDonald was the fact that he was cutting an avocado, stabbed himself in the hand. He thought that it was deep enough that he might have to pull out of the fight. I mean, only at the post-fight conference would you hear a story like that. So, I mean, media members were laughing. It did not zoom in on Dana's reaction, who was probably going, oh, God, what are you doing? Can't even cut your own fruit? So, narrowly escaped that. He said he went to the hospital. It missed any tendons. Didn't cause any real damage. Got stitched up, and he actually fought. And that was a week out from the fight. Could you imagine? The UFC already had to replace Rashad Evans with Patrick Cummins. Who would you replace Rory McDonald with against Damian Maia? Damian Maia is no easy task. So nevertheless, I thought that was a funny story. But again, congratulations to Rory McDonald for a great performance. In the light heavyweight division, it was Daniel Cormier defeating Patrick Cummins in a hurry by TKO. Exactly 1 minute and 19 seconds into the first round, he ended that fight. He had something to prove, though. Patrick Cummins talked a lot of trash, and he made it very personal. Of course, he exposed pretty much the unwritten code of the wrestling room. You never talk about it. And Daniel said he was going through some personal times. Yeah, he may have cried there, but that's not something that you make public. So he had a bit of a vendetta against Patrick Cummins, though he did say that once he entered the octagon, all of his emotions were gone, and he just tried to utilize the game plan. Well, the game plan worked to a T, because all he did was really push forward, land some huge uppercuts, and utilize his power at 205, and he just put Patrick Cummins away like it was no problem. Now, as for Patrick Cummins, one has to imagine that he will get one more opportunity inside the octagon. In fact, Dana White confirmed this. We have to remember they took the fight on 10 days' notice. So I commend him for that, because 10 days to compete against a guy like Daniel Cormier, the caliber fighter that he is. He was a top contender at heavyweight. He's likely going to be a top contender at 205 with another victory. I commend him for taking the fight. So, again, it was a short fight, but I was very happy with it. I was pleased with Daniel Cormier's performance. I did not actually think he was going to finish him. So the fact that he came out and threw some excellent combinations, utilized his power at a new weight class, I expect big things from Daniel Cormier. As for Patrick Cummins, yeah, give him another fight. Allow him with a full training camp, and let's see what he's really about. In the women's bantamweight division, it was Ronda Rousey defeating Sarah McMahon via TKO. It was actually a knee to the liver. You can insert any Boss Rudin quote you want there. To the liver, to the liver. Some controversy with the finish. Again, with Herb Dean refereeing the main event. It's weird, because did aliens abduct Herb Dean and replace him with one of their own? That's honestly the only reasonable explanation for an awful night of refereeing. And that's from the uncrowned best in the business. So I just don't really understand what was going on there. But it did appear as though the fight was stopped prematurely. I took it a step further. I remember right when it happened, I tweeted horrible stoppage. Would I go back and would I change what I said? Probably not. I mean, it was kind of a horrible stoppage. Maybe I wouldn't use, you know, that word, horrible. Premature stoppage, I'd go back and probably utilize. So, yeah, I mean, she took the knee to the body. She went down. She didn't have her hands completely up. And I believe Herb Dean explained to Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports, I didn't want her to take all of this unnecessary punishment to the face. So it's very bizarre, some of his stoppages, because earlier in the evening, we just saw Mike Pyle unload on TJ Waldberger. And we were begging for Herb Dean to stop the fight. He let it go 10 seconds too late. And then in this case, bam, it was over like that. It was just a knee to the liver, and that was it. And Ronda Rousey was landing some good shots in the clinch against the cage, and, you know, Sarah McMahon was eating them up, and she was actually landing some good shots early in the round as well, too. But, yeah, a premature stoppage, especially in a title fight. Come on. You got to let it last longer than that. I always go back to Josh Rosenthal. Remember him? Brock Lesnar, Shane Carwin? Many claim that he let that fight go on far too long. But, in fact, I mean, in the second round, Brock Lesnar came back and landed that triangle choke. So he still had something in the tank, clearly. So the fight did not go on too long. In this case, yeah, it was premature, much like Uriah Faber and Henan Barao. Again, it was Herb Dean refereeing that, so I don't know what's going on with him. Also, in terms of top contenders in that division, it should be Kat Zingano with the next opportunity. Again, she's come across some very difficult times. Her husband recently committed suicide. Aside from that, she's had some terrible knee injuries. Still recovering from that. She had surgery. So it's a sensitive situation. Do you approach Kat and say, I know you're coming off, you know, the suicide of your husband, still recovering from surgery. Do you want to fight Ronda Rousey? You know, again, it doesn't seem, how do you do that? You have to get like a psychologist to approach the situation. Can you imagine Dana White not exactly the most overly sensitive guy. I can't imagine that would play out too well. So you've got Katsin Gano. Past that, your other option is Alexis Davis. All due respect to Alexis Davis. I really respect her. I really like her. I chose her to defeat Jessica Ai. But witnessing that performance, or that performance, I should say, against Jessica Ai, does she have anything, any tricks in the bag to defeat Ronda Rousey? No, I don't believe so. Alexis Davis is well-rounded, more than competent on the ground. That's something that Ronda Rousey hasn't really dealt with. But even on the feet, while she lands some great combinations, I still believe that Ronda Rousey is better and has more power. So I could actually see that fight being contested on the feet and Ronda Rousey winning. She doesn't need to win via armbar in every single fight. She just proved that recently. So I'm not sure what Alexis Davis brings to the table. Great fighter, top contender, but she will not dethrone Ronda Rousey. The other option, it's a bit of a wild card option, is Cyborg. Cyborg recently made the claim that she will drop down to 135 and plans to retire Ronda Rousey, quote, like I did Gina Carano. Bold statements. But Dana White actually cleared this up at the post-fight conference by saying, yeah, you know what, that's great that she's dropping down to 135, you know, and she's still in Invicta, but she's going to have to fight a couple of times at 135 and prove that she's got what it takes to hang with Ronda Rousey. I've got to agree with Dana White there. To bring her in at 135 and have her compete with Ronda Rousey, yes, it's all about the money. It'd be a big money fight in the women's bantamweight division. But she hasn't proven herself at 135, and even if she can make 135, so allow her to make it a few times, perhaps win the Invicta women's bantamweight championship, and then cross over to take on Ronda Rousey. So I wouldn't rush that because it's going to make a lot of money either way. It could happen towards the end of this year, more than likely, probably early 2015. But either way, I think we want to see that fight. Because the thing about Ronda Rousey, love her or hate her, she reigns over an entire division of peers that simply aren't at her level. That's pure dominance, my friends. Let's get to the weekly recap.
The UFC Weekly Recap.
Once again, I thank you for tuning in. I'm battling cold and flu-like symptoms, but that was not going to keep me from Ultimate Fighting Weekly and recording a brand new edition of the program. When I worked in radio broadcasting, it was the same sort of mentality. I was thinking, you know what, kill or be killed, I'm still going to do my show unless I can't breathe or I have no voice whatsoever. So let's get to it. In terms of some fight announcements, Clay Guida will be appearing on the UFC Fight Night 39 co-main event. George Roop versus Dustin Cormier will be competing on the Tough Nations finale in Quebec as well. I like that matchup. Manny Gambarian versus Nick Lentz has been added to UFC Fight Night in Cincinnati. Also, Ed Herman and Rafael Natal will be competing on that card as well, too. As an injury update, while it was initially reported that Rashad Evans would avoid surgery, his training camp, the Black Zillions, released an official statement via their website and also on Twitter as well, too. It cleared the air. It said, Rashad will undergo surgery this week in Los Angeles, California. And Rashad's medical team expects him to be out of active training for 6 months. Wow. Half a year. I love Rashad Evans. I really do. I have a soft spot for him. I think that he has a great mentality. He captures a lot of different, attention, so to speak. He's made a lot of money. He's always intriguing and very talented as well. But at the same time, he's got to be the most injury-prone fighter on the roster. Ever since the debacle that was UFC 128, he has just not been able to remain healthy. So I feel really bad for him because he was scheduled to fight Daniel Cormier. It never happened. Who do you match him up against next? 6 months is a long time. And that's out of active training for 6 months. That means that we probably won't see him back for 9 or 10 minimum. Maybe even a year. The only thing that Rashad has going for him, though, aside from the fight career, and I shouldn't say the only thing because he has a lot going for him, but he has a career outside of the UFC as an analyst. And he's a very good one at that. He's very competent. I like him as an analyst with Fox Sports, with UFC Tonight, whatever the case may be. I think he's great. So if this keeps happening, he's already you know, a shoo-in for the UFC Hall of Fame. No doubt about that. One of the best light heavyweights of all time. No doubt about that either. So if it comes down to, listen, you're just going to keep getting injured, and you're going to come back and fight once, maybe every year and a half. Call that a career and walk out on top. I mean, yeah, he's not a champion. Maybe he's not even a top five light heavyweight. But he's always been a perennial top contender. Got to give him that, right? So it's a shame there. This next portion of the program should be sponsored by an anti-doping PSA. Because that was clearly the hot topic of the week, starting with George St. Pierre, who is still on an indefinite hiatus. He appeared on TSN's Off the Record. Up here in Canada, it's hosted by Michael Landsberg. I actually like it. I know that it comes under fire sometimes because Michael Landsberg tends to poke and prod at the guests and ask some pretty annoying questions at times. But they're always on point. And typically the guests reveal a lot about not only themselves, but different situations as well, too. So here's what George had to say. Probably the most memorable quote from the interview. There are a lot of people on drugs. It's already a bold enough statement. I'm never sure 100%. The reason is I don't want to accuse any individual. If you accuse one individual, 20 others will arrive. What I want to attack? I want to attack the system. I don't want to attack the individual. People have to understand, I don't want to attack the UFC. I want to help the brand, help the sport. He's been very active on the interview circuit as of late. And it appears as though George's plea is simply stricter drug testing. It's hard to argue with that. Most journalists and fans and fighters have been begging for it anyway. The only thing it's going to do is inconvenience some fighters. It means random drug testing, because the way that cycles go, yeah, it is physically possible for an individual to dope, go through the notions, go through the cycle, and then be done. Look no further than Lance Armstrong and the entire cycling world, which was just such a gong show. I'm not saying the MMA is similar to that, but I am alluding to the fact that it's possible. Who knows what kind of percentage of the fighters are doping, taking PEDs. But stricter drug testing certainly would at least help refine that and bring some more prestige to the sport. So I understand where George is coming from. He's fighting a dangerous game, though. Because you know that Dana White and the UFC is a monopoly, and they can really come down hard on him. So I commend him for doing what he's doing. I think a lot of individuals are wishing that he did this while he was still an active member on the roster. But nevertheless, at least he's still making some headway with that. Not a lot of individuals speak out on that, other than the disgruntled quote-unquote legends like Tito and Ken Shamrock and some of those. But you have a guy like George St. Pierre still in the prime of his life. And an individual who always found success in the UFC speaking out on it. So it definitely is a bit of an eye-opener there. Speaking of drug testing, Vitor Belfort has specifically requested that middleweight champ Chris Weidman have extra testing just ahead of their event at UFC 173. Are you kidding me? It's laughable. Vitor Belfort is the one who is on TRT. That's still legal, and he's allowed to be on it as long as his levels are tested on a regular basis. But he wants Chris Weidman to have extra testing. I don't understand it. It's like he's wanting to take the attention off of him, take the pressure off of him for all of the TRT criticism he gets. He told MMAfighting.com, I don't believe Weidman is on steroids, but people give too much importance to the treatment. I religiously do medical support. And to make it fair, my opponent should be tested with blood exams throughout his camp. Well, guess what, Vitor? And I'm a big fan of Vitor, and I always have been. But you are on TRT, my friend. You need to be tested regularly. That's one of the conditions with something that makes you, quote unquote, feel younger and stronger and faster. It's borderline steroid as it is. Now he's pointing to Chris Weidman saying, you step up like a man and you get tested like me. Well, he's not on TRT. If he was on TRT, he'd have to go through the same procedures and the same process. It's just so ridiculous. I like Vitor a lot, but his logic baffles me sometimes, especially in this situation. Moving on to another TRT user. Wanderlei Silva took a stab at Chael Sonnen for depending on TRT. Here's what he had to say. If he needs that, what can I say? I thought about people using it, or I thought about using it, he said, but my wife told me she would ask for a divorce. So I said I wouldn't. People say Sutton only has one ball. So if he has to use it, maybe he can get it up. I mean, I don't really find it a hilarious statement like he did. He was laughing all throughout it. But he's really taking a stab at Chael Sonnen where it hurts, I guess. The thing about Chael Sonnen, I'll give him credit for, because he's an excellent self-promoter. He's excellent at the art of cutting promos, which they do in the wrestling world. What he's done, essentially, is pretty much almost completely ignored the fact that he's on TRT. Nobody asks him about it anymore. Because he would just go off on another tangent. He's almost like a politician, right? A politician like a Bill Clinton who, you know, had to face a sex scandal. And I'm not putting them in the same boat, don't worry. But, of course, after quite some time, he just feels silly asking the same questions because he's just going to avoid it. Or just say no or say yes. Chael Sonnen is the same way. Am I on TRT? Yes. What's it to you? Why are you going to hound at somebody like that for? So it makes total sense there. Also, in an interview with Mike Chiappetta, Nick Diaz mentioned that he wants the winner, now this is laughable, of Hendricks and Lawler. Keep in mind, Nick Diaz lost to Carlos Condit for the Interim Rape Championship, and also to George St. Pierre as well. So he's dropped two in a row to champions. But he wants a title opportunity. It's got to be the one guy that uses his brain less than Vitor Belfort. He's exciting, but I don't know if he thinks before he speaks. Here's what he had to say. I've been fighting for 11 years. I already did all those contender fights. I don't have to take a warm-up fight. Why would I take a warm-up fight? To help somebody out? To bring them to my level? I've already been through all that, and you still didn't seem... You still didn't see me take an ass whipping. Well, I mean, I kind of beg to differ because that happened against George St. Pierre, but I understand where he's coming from. He also went on to say, I don't care. I'm talking about a title fight match, a bottom line. I'm the only draw here, bottom line. We had the third biggest pay-per-view. That wasn't just because of George St. Pierre. And these guys aren't doing that. People want to pay to see me fight. They want to see someone get knocked out or someone tapped out, or they want to see me get my ass whipped. Like they've been wanting to see, but they still don't get to see. Not exactly the most well-spoken guy, but he made a point, and I understand where he's coming from. It just doesn't make sense. Dana White also kind of echoed what I just said. Here's what he had to say. It's not even worth talking about. He hasn't fought. He hasn't wanted a fight. He's not even in the conversation. Well, I mean, he dropped two fights to legitimate champions. And he wants to automatically be thrown into the mix. That's not how it happens. He talks about warm-up fights like he's going to fight like a top 25 opponent. No, he'd get like a top 5 guy. He'd get like a Jake Allenberger. Why are you going to turn down a fight like that? That's a great fight. Why not even give him like a Rory McDonald? I think that's worth it, but nevertheless, I guess he just wants to jump right back into the mix. Not going to happen.
Predictions.
UFC Fight Night Kim versus Hathaway takes place this coming Saturday, March 1st, from Cotai, Macau. It's located over in Asia. If you're unaware of what Macau is all about, apparently it's now the gambling capital of the world. We're talking like surpassing Vegas. So check it out. All of these hotels and casinos are actually popping up there, making tons of money. This is also known as the Ultimate Fighter China Finale. I will fully admit right off the bat, I did not watch or follow the Ultimate Fighter China, so I'm not exactly familiar with the competitors on this card that are directly from the show. However, there are three fights on the main card that I am more than capable of making predictions for. In the featherweight division, Hatsu Aoki taking on Ivan Menjivar. Should be a glorified loser leaves town match. Somebody's getting their walking papers in this one. Following his victory at UFC 144, Hatsu Aoki was on a short list of potential contenders to square off against Jose Aldo. The thing, though, is that he could actually confess to the UFC he did not feel ready for such a task and wanted to get a few more fights under his belt before he competed against somebody like Jose Aldo. Cost him dearly, though, because he's currently on a 3-fight losing skid and likely fighting for his job. Now, mind you, of course, it's very controversial against Clay Guida, but nevertheless, is still dropping three in a row. Menjivar has dropped three of his last four and does not find himself in a better situation. A loss against Mike Easton derailed his momentum, and he just hasn't really rediscovered it. So, again, somebody is going to be cut after this fight. I thoroughly enjoy Ivan Menjivar. But despite his training at TriStar Gym in Montreal, it simply won't be enough against the durable grinder that is Hatsu Aoki. I'm going with Hatsu via unanimous decision in this one. In the heavyweight division, it's Matt Mitrione versus Sean Jordan. Matt Mitrione has dropped three of his last four, which likely places him on the proverbial chopping block with a loss. So his performances against Roy Nelson and Brandon Schaub, and I was there to see the performance against Brandon Schaub live, were not only disappointing, but he looked uninspired and extremely lethargic. I was thinking, did you even work on your cardio? Did you even train at all? Meanwhile, his opponent, Sean Jordan, is deceptively athletic and quick for a heavyweight. And I believe that's going to be the major difference there. So I'm going with Sean Jordan via TKO. In the welterweight division, it is headlining the card. If you want to bring up two talented prospects that fly completely under the radar, look no further than Dong-Yong Kim and John Hathaway. Kim is 9-2-1 inside the octagon. Who would have guessed that when he debuted? He holds victories over Nate Diaz, TJ Grant, Paulo Thiago, and Matt Brown. So some quality opponents there. And he's mostly known for his excellent top control. But he recently showcased his power with a huge KO victory. He was knockout of the night against Eric Silva. So, intrigues me even more to see him compete. Hathaway is merely 26 years old. Whew. He's quietly compiled a 7-1 record inside the UFC organization. Much like Kim, his fighting style is not exactly fan-friendly, but it's extremely effective. I mean, he's comfortable with getting his opponent down and holding them there with such a suffocating top game. But one of the questions surrounding Hathaway has been his health. He's been forced to pull out of several fights, and he's been inactive since September 2012. I mean, that's quite a while, my friends. By the time he competes, it's going to be, what, 15 months? You can't do that inside the octagon anymore, especially with guys who are constantly training and evolving and competing. Kim is large as a welterweight, with an outstanding reach to match, and I can't see Hathaway getting past him. So I have Dong-Yong Kim via unanimous decision there. So those are my predictions. I hope that you check it out. It's only exclusive on UFC Fight Pass. Up here in Canada, we do have access to it on Sportsnet 360. The only issue with that is the fact that it's probably going to start airing at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. I might want to sleep in. Chances are I'll probably get up to catch it, though. That will do it for episode 53 of Ultimate Fighting Weekly. As always, I appreciate you tuning in, whether it's through MMASucka.com or eventually through the archives on ChrisTopBlack.com. It means a lot. All of the feedback has been humbling, so thank you very much for all of that here. So, until next time, take care and enjoy your UFC action.
This has been Ultimate Fighting Weekly with Chris Toplak. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Toplak or at ChrisToplak.com and visit MMASucka.com for a new show every Sunday.